the interview process itself is just nerve-wracking because you walk in and it's rapid fire and the questions come with no rhyme or reason. I got a lot of questions about race and higher education, but then you would get questions that kind of got at the essence of who you were. So, you know, one question was, talk about a book you read in middle school. And I mean, who actually thinks regularly about books they read in middle school? But the thing that came to my mind was a book I read about, I think, like the Korean War and this family and how they kind of made their way through, like escaping this like kind of war-torn environment. Another question I got was, if you could give up the internet or three fingers, which would you give up? And I think I said I would give
up. What a question.
And then I said I would give up three fingers because medical technology had advanced far enough for me to get my fingers back. You're jumping back and forth between personal, professional, academic sorts of questions. And so that process, again, was nerve-wracking. Finished the first interview, which is roughly 30 minutes at most, which feel, I mean, and it feels like 5 minutes because it happened so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the committee invited, I want to say five or six interviewees back again to have another interview. I went last both times. Getting a second interview really doesn't mean much of anything. It doesn't mean you did bad or mean you did poor or well. It just means they need to know more about you. And so I came back for a second interview, and you find out whether you have won the Rhodes Scholarship the day of. We started interviews, I guess, at 8 that morning. You know, people went in order. Finished up the first round around 1:30. Had a break from 1:30 to 2:30. The committee says we need more time. Around 3:30, they call us back for second interviews. And then roughly around 5:30, they finally call us in to give the announcement. And the other person who won, her last name starts with a G, so my name was first. And they say, the two Rhodes Scholars from District 12 are Robert Fisher. And after my name was read, I didn't really hear any much of anything. And I still can't place my finger, again, months later, I can't place my finger on the emotion or the number of emotions I felt. I mean, it was a mix of being excited, I mean, being to some extent overwhelmed. You know, I kind of felt all of my experiences, like in that moment, you know, that had led me to that this event to say, like, wow, you know, all I could say was wow.
You know, it just occurred to me that one of the people who won a Rhodes Scholarship is Chris Christopherson.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very idiosyncratic personality, you know, but was clearly very talented, but very much an individual. I'm thinking maybe that is part of what they're looking for, huh? They're not necessarily looking for somebody who fits the mold in any given way. Mm-hmm. They're looking for somebody who's an independent thinker. Does it strike you that way?
Yeah. So I think everyone who interviewed for the scholarship in my district, I think fits that mold of someone who, or someone's who had just really come into their own thought processes. They developed their own kind of analytical framework of assessing the world around them. And it was a very thoughtful framework. It was informed by a lot of different opinions and ideas, their own readings. I mean, we approach things differently as we talked about issues of the day. But at the same time, I mean, every conversation was meaningful and thoughtful. And I mean, and in part, the experience of interviewing is just sitting in the lounge talking to the other interviewees saying, like, man, can you even believe that we're here?
Yeah.
It's just an amazing opportunity just to be there. But then to kind of figure out why they're in that space, to hear them talk about what they do and what they think and what they plan on doing. Yeah, I mean, you nailed it on the head, I think. It's a group of people who really are independent and free thinkers. And
so what was the process for you? How did you come to apply in the first place? Was that something that was in your family that your dad said to you at some point when you were younger, you know, I want you to do this, Robert, when you get older?
It's a great question because I had no, like, even, I couldn't have fathomed applying for, let alone winning the Rhodes Scholarship as a freshman in college. I mean, I came here just to do well. I mean, to learn, to grow, like most students. But that wasn't even on the horizon. I mean, it seemed as if it was something that was literally unattainable. I mean, only 32 people in the U.S., 80 people in the world to get this experience. And, you know, it wasn't as if I had gone to an Ivy League institution. My dad didn't finish college. My mom went back to college in her mid-30s. So I didn't really come from a lineage of people who had gone to college. I'm in very many ways a first-generation college student. My mom had a not traditional experience having gone back as an adult. And I was already in high school when she started. So by no means did my mom or dad or anyone in my family say, you need to apply for this. When I got to college, I got very involved. I had some really great folks who put me in spaces that allowed me to demonstrate to other folks that I had some talent.
Robert Fisher grew up in Clarksville, Tennessee. After graduating from high school, he accepted a place in the intellectually rigorous Brock Scholars Program here at UTC because, he said, he wanted to go to a university that would prepare him for graduate school. At the end of his sophomore year, he spent the summer in Washington, D.C. as an intern at the Institute for Responsible Citizenship. He was one of a dozen young black men from across the country chosen for the internship that year. He was chosen to be a part of the program again a year later.
I mean, and just being around those men in that program, I mean, and so they're Yale, Princeton, Harvard, you know, you name it. And so even then, I kind of had a chip on my shoulder because I was the kid from the Regional Comprehensive University. And when I said, I'm from the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, everyone would say, where? So I had to explain, you know, myself a lot just because I was the person who was kind of the odd man out. But that experience exposed me not only to those other men, which is just very culturally affirming, but professionally, just amazing professional development. And the program itself was intentional about exposing young black men to other leaders, be it public service, be it business, you name it, in D.C. So I had some incredible contacts that I could leverage.
Following that second summer internship, Robert Fisher applied for and won a Truman Scholarship. The Truman Scholarship is awarded every year to 60 outstanding juniors who aspire to make a contribution through public service.
That was the first competitive national fellowship that I applied for. And like I said, I was just very fortunate to have been awarded that scholarship. And again, that gave me additional leverage to apply for the Rhodes. A lot of Truman Scholars will go on to apply for the Rhodes, and several Rhodes Scholars in my class are Truman Scholars as well. At least there's at least two others in my class.
So you said that you were the odd man out.
Mm-hmm.
I assume what you meant is that you're the only one that wasn't from an Ivy League school?
There were other folks who were not from Ivy Leagues, but they were huge public research, so University of Maryland, University of Kansas, or then very elite private, so Vanderbilt, Villanova, George Washington, Georgetown. So again,
nevertheless, there have been three Rhodes. You're the third Rhodes Scholar from UTC. Mm-hmm. As long as I've been here, there's that sense that the things happen in Chattanooga that maybe don't happen that often in cities this size.
Oh, I agree. And honestly, I think what also was just an extraordinarily compliment to my work and my capacity as a student leader on campus is the work I've done in the communities. Chattanooga embraced me, and I mean Chattanooga, the entire city, and just embraced me with open arms. And so I was given a lot of opportunity to serve in leadership roles in different community advisory boards. I work with the mayor's office in an initiative called Chattanooga Forward, where I served with Kim White and Heidi Hefferlin, chairing a downtown task force, talking about making downtown more inclusive and more open to all Chattanoogans. And so, you know, to be able to say I did that when I was applying for the Truman and applying for the Rhodes, it stuck out to the interviewers and to the committees. They were like, wow, you know, how are you given this opportunity? Yeah. I said, you know, this is what we do in Chattanooga. It's the, you know, the Chattanooga way that people, all people, are able to engage in that process. And then another thing I think was really great was because I was young and I was in these environments, I was able to challenge the process a lot and say, you know what? We talk about engaging all people in Chattanooga. We could do a better job at that. as we think about the multicultural model that should inform the city that we are, it means we actually have to have multicultural boards, multicultural commissions, multicultural committees, wherein the opinions of someone from a different side of town mesh with the opinions from someone on another side of town or a different cultural identity. These things come together, and we create a Chattanooga that invites everybody in the city to be a part of what we do here. And, you know, I was able to say that sometimes, and people could hear me differently because I was a student and because I was new to the city, and I had ideas that were fresh, and people received those very well. And so I was thankful for that opportunity to thoughtfully challenge the process and get away with it because I was young.
Robert Fisher is one of 140 students in the Brock Scholars Honors College here at UTC. The scholars are given a number of advantages and privileges, but much is demanded of them, academically and emotionally, in return. But for Robert, that demanding curriculum was exactly what he was looking for when he came here to UTC.
The point of the Honors College is not to teach you to read and regurgitate. It's to teach you how to bring in information from different sources, synthesize that information, then develop your own opinion. And then once you've developed it on opinion, nurture it, grow it, make it more nuanced. And so for me, that type of learning environment, you know, some people think it's combative. For me, it's perfect. And the Honors College has provided that. The Political Science Department has provided that. Student development in the way like my leadership development, they've provided that. And I think it's made me a better leader. When I built my executive team in both my first and second term, I was intentional about getting people on my exec team who thought differently than me. I needed people to challenge the process, to challenge me, to push me to think differently. I had to find people who had strengths where I had weaknesses. And it made the unit better. And I think it's oddly enough in an academic sense, I learned not to be intimidated by people who knew more than me. And I learned to value them as colleagues. And then that impacted the way I thought about leadership. I value people around me who have different opinions, who may know more. And at the end of the day, I learned this too. Like if the whole organization is doing well, you look good anyway because you're the leader who's leading it.
That's right.
They'll say, well, he's on to something.
You sound like Lincoln. You know, Lincoln surrounded himself in his cabinet with
team
people he
rivals.
Didn't like and didn't agree with.
I read Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin. And that honestly influenced the way I thought about developing my executive team and the folks I appointed in SGA. There was a direct link. I read that book right before I started my first term.
So this honors program, I guess, is good grounding for you for when you go to Oxford.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I'm actually really excited about that opportunity. You know, the interesting thing about being involved in so many different committees and organizations, what you name it, in Chattanooga is that I really haven't had the chance to sink my teeth into some ideas, kind of sit in thoughtful reflection about concepts that I really want to explore. And so I think the type of educational environment that Oxford provides, as well as like the schedule I will have when I'm there, will actually give me, you know, just the space to think and to learn and to explore the things that I care about. So for me, that's racial inequality, that's education equity, and to some extent, just like social equality. And to have the chance just to sit and read and write for, you know, a year or two. So my program is comparative social policy, and the program focuses on studying how different governments manage their welfare systems. And so in welfare, in the sense that, like, government services in the way of healthcare, education, public housing, things like that. And so my interest lies, again, largely in education. I really wanted to sit and see, like, how does the, you know, the world educate the masses, right? And what can we do in a global context to improve how we extend access to education for multiple peoples? But I think specifically for me is studying what are the disparities in how majority groups access education and how lower income minorities access education, or minorities in general, because even among, you know, folks with equal economic competition, there's still some disparate impacts and opportunities for people of color relative to white folks, especially in the U.S. And so just to have a chance to explore that for me, just explore that kind of like in an unmitigated fashion.
Robert Fisher will graduate from UTC this spring. He'll begin working on a master's degree at Oxford in the fall. Following his studies at Oxford, he plans to come back to the U.S. to work on a PhD. Many people, as you can imagine, have asked him, will you come back to Chattanooga? He says he hasn't ruled that out.
I really entertain the idea because I think we're on the verge of a different type of rebirth again, wherein, you know, we've built this physical environment that's just extraordinarily attractive, and we've kind of created this public process that really brings in opinions from all types of people to inform what our city looks like. But I think that the next rebirth is, how do we take that one step further? And how, you know, the same innovative and entrepreneurial mindset we had about creating business, how do we do that when we talk about poverty? How do we do that when we talk about education? How do we do that when we talk about healthcare? Can we apply that same entrepreneurial, innovative, go-getter, let's shake things up mentality to people, not just to place, not just to physical buildings, but people? How can we create a city that says, like, not only is the physical plant beautiful, but the people we have here feel like they have equal stake in what's happening in the city, no matter the color of your skin, no matter the economic tax bracket you reside in, and no matter where you live in town, that you're a Chattanoogan too. I think that'll be a more difficult challenge because it's philosophical. And then that philosophical distinction has to turn into policy, and then that becomes political. And so, you know, to have a great asset at UTC to, again, to research and come up with some of the best ideas to help us through that new rebirth of being a city that really values equity, I think is what we're on the verge on. And I think UTC being here and having students to offer those ideas is a really wonderful thing.
For WUTC's Around and About, I'm Richard Winham.